Hare Krishna. So yesterday we left off in Vrindavan during Kartik, somewhere in the month of October, November. So, of course, we only have a few days left and there's lots to talk about. So we could either stay in Vrindavan for a little bit and talk about monkeys in Srila Prabhupada, or we can move to Bombay and speak about some pastimes there. What would you prefer, monkeys or Bombay? Mm-hmm. Anything? We can have more time. Class goes till 9 o'clock today? Yeah? We can have more time. So we'll talk a little bit about the monkeys in Vrindavan. We have to talk. You can't talk about Vrindavan without talking about monkeys in Vrindavan. So, from the very beginning, of course, going to India for me was such an experience. We got to see everything you read about in Bhagavad Gita. It come to life when you went to India, you know, especially when you went to Vrindavan and it had dogs, camels, hogs, asses, the monkeys. Everything was there that, to us, it was just reading. But to actually see hogs, you know, putting their nose through stool and the asses carrying their big burdens, it was really very nice to see these things. And I remember the first time I went to Vrindavan, it was so interesting because, of course, Gurudas and Jamuna, they were there. And I remember Gurudas, he would take Prabhupada for a morning walk in Vrindavan, which was Prabhupada's home. You know, he had lived there so many years. And yet, when we were there, we'd go on the morning walk, and Gurudas, he would act like he was the tour guide. And he was showing Prabhupada as we were walking down, and this is this place, it belongs to such and such, and this is this mandir, and this is this mandir. And Prabhupada would just nod approvingly, like he had no idea where he was. And this is how Prabhupada just was so sweet and would engage everyone in service. And I never even thought about it at the time, and I was thinking, you know, he's informing Prabhupada so many things. You know, of course, Prabhupada always, he already knew everything that was there. And one morning we went on the walk, and there was a vulture perched, and it was like on a house, a residence, but it had like a small dome, and it was perched on the dome. And we were walking, and Prabhupada saw the vulture there, and he said, "Oh, very bad." He said, "Someone's going to die there very soon." Like, you know, so this was Vrindavan, everything was so nice. And I was talking about Jamuna, how she would roll chapatis right by the doors. And there's doors at the kitchen. And the one day, I was just sitting on the veranda as I would do chanting, and Prabhupada was in taking prasadam. And she was rolling her chapatis and just went. If she went to give Prabhupada a chapati, a monkey went right into the room, just, you know, opened the doors, grabbed the whole chapati dough, and took off with the chapati dough. And Prabhupada said, "You have to keep the doors closed," he said. And those doors, which were, I guess, about 4 foot high, had to go into Prabhupada's rooms in Vrindavan. I learned about those doors because the walls are like this thick at Radha Damodar. And you would bend down and go into Prabhupada's quarters. And, of course, I was not familiar with having to bend down to go into rooms, you know, just walking in through a doorway, 6 foot doorway, and you would go into a room. So sometimes I would go into Prabhupada's room, he would ring the bell, and of course I would try to rush into the room. And the one time I went in, and of course I picked my head up a little too soon, and I slammed it right on the wall, the concrete wall. And I went, and of course I didn't want to look too foolish. I just went in and paid my obeisances, and I got up, and Prabhupada went, "Whew." He said, "That's to teach you to become humble." He said, "You have to bend down," he said. He said, "Yes, Prabhupada." And then one day Prabhupada was In the evening, he would give darshans, Radha Damodar, to his disciples, and guests would come in. Prabhupada had many friends there, and they would come, you know, also to see Prabhupada. And even though they had nothing, these people had nothing at all, they would always bring an offering to Srila Prabhupada when they would come. They would either bring a few bananas or an apple or a flower. They would get something and bring it. And this is a Vaishnava. Whatever you have, just give a little something. And he was speaking one day, just sitting on his asana there, and there was maybe 15, 20 devotees in the room. And as he was speaking, just within a moment, a monkey just ran into the room. And right at Prabhupada's feet, there was a hand of bananas. Monkeys are really attracted to bananas. That's their first, foremost food. They love bananas. As soon as they see a banana, they go wild, right? So it came in and it just grabbed the bananas, and in 1 second it was headed out the door. Vishaka, you threw a, she had a chudder. She momentarily got over the monkey. And the monkey still escaped with just the one banana and got out. And Prabhupada started laughing, you know, he was laughing. He said, just see. He said, that is mystic power. He said, in one moment, he said, the monkey was in the door, grabbed the bananas and was gone. He said, you could not do that. He said, but the monkey is very expert at how to get food. He said, so for you, that's mystic power. He said, and he said, mystic power means being able to do something that someone else can't do. And then to you, that's mystical power, he said. So he said, everyone. So Prabhupada always preached, whatever happened, Prabhupada would give us some philosophical understanding of what was going on within the material nature. So he said, the animals, the monkey, he has special propensity, special ability how to do these things. You know, every day things are happening in Vrindavan. They take your glasses, they take your bead bag. They know how to make exchanges. So, of course, that was the one time which Prabhupada was also very, very sweet, and that was in Vrindavan. And during that month, Prabhupada also stayed on the second floor. He had his rooms on the first floor, but then they were fixing them, painting. So Prabhupada moved up to the second floor, which is where Gurudas and Jamuna would stay, and they fixed the rooms for Prabhupada there. And it had a very, the rooftop, of course, was like a veranda. And one day, Prabhupada told me when we were up there, because Prabhupada bathed once a day just before he took lunch, ever since he had had his heart attack, the physician told him, only use warm water, don't use cold water because it's too dangerous for your heart, too much of a shock. So it should be warm water when you bathe. So after taking his noon massage, Prabhupada would bathe with warm water. And in India, of course, in Vrindavan, he just used one bucket. And we would put that immersion heater in it. But in Vrindavan, he said, just put it out in the sunshine. He said, and it'll become warm enough by the sun. So he didn't waste even any electricity for his bath. He said, just let the sun warm it. He said, that will be sufficient. It's warm enough here. And I remember watching the monkeys would come and drink out of it sometimes, you know. And it didn't matter. Prabhupada wasn't bothered by these things. So then the one day I described how after massage, Prabhupada would bathe and I would set up his cloth on his bed and set up his tilak, everything. So I had done that. It was upstairs again. And then Prabhupada came into a sitting room and he put on his tilak. And I was just outside the door. And then he started saying Gayatri. So for some reason, I decided I needed to go in to do something in Prabhupada's room. So I opened the door and I went in and I offered obeisances. And then Prabhupada's sitting up very straight and a hand on his thread like this. And all of a sudden, he just stopped everything, and he picked up his ball of tilak, like this big, and I was getting up from obeisances, and he threw it, like, really hard, you know, and like he was throwing it at me, you know, and he threw it, and it went right by my head, this ball, and I was like, and he's there, monkey, a monkey, he said, So here I had left the door open. So in that moment, as I was offering obeisances, Prabhupada saying, gotcha, a monkey came in and grabbed one of his sandals, which were right by the door. So that was it, you know. So I realized he wasn't throwing it at me. He was throwing it at the monkey to get him away from his sandals. But it was too late. The monkey was so fast, he grabbed Prabhupada's sandal. So he just got right up and he said, come on. So I got up and the two of us, we went outside. And we just went right outside the door and the monkey was just on the roof of Prabhupada's room. Just, you know, regular old Vrindavan monkey. And he's just sitting there now with the shoe, Prabhupada's sandal in his hand, and he's looking down at us. And this was my first experience with monkeys, you know, what they did. I didn't know so much what was going on. Of course, Prabhupada knew. And he's just sitting there with the slipper looking at us. And Prabhupada's next to me, and the two of us are there with our arms up. And Prabhupada's reaching up, and he starts just getting all angry. He starts yelling, some monkeys, rascal monkeys. He said, they're such rascals, you know. And the monkey's just playing with both of us, you know. And he's like this with the sandal, and Prabhupada's reaching up, and I'm reaching up. And he's not going to give us any sandal, you know. That was understood. And Prabhupada keeps, these rascals. He said, they're such rascals, you know. Just nonsense, these monkeys. And going back and forth. And then Prabhupada got his cane. Then we start swinging the cane. And we're both just going back and forth. This monkey's just toying with us, you know, with this. Because he's on the roof and he has a sandal. And now he's putting it in his mouth. And he's holding it in his mouth and he's got both hands and he's reaching down at the cane. And Prabhupada keeps calling him as rascals, you know, such rascals. And then he says, go in, he said, and get some sweets. Because in Prabhupada's room, there was always a jar filled with sweets. At that time, it was para we would give out. Because Prabhupada always saw, just like here, someone comes to the temple, they must get prasadam. So whenever someone came into Prabhupada's room, they always left with prasadam, maha prasadam. So he said, get some sweets. So I got three sweets in my hand, para in my hand. And I went back out, and Prabhupada's still there with this monkey. He's determined to get his slipper back. And the monkey's chewing on the end of Prabhupada, on the heel of his slipper. Now he's kind of gnawing at it, you know. And Prabhupada said, try to give him a sweet, he said, and then get the shoe. Because, of course, I was a little taller than Prabhupada. So I'm reaching up, and I have a para in one hand, and I'm reaching up. And, of course, the monkey's putting the shoe down like this, Prabhupada's slipper. And three sweets I lost because I would put the sweet up and he would offer me the slipper. And as soon as I tried to get the slipper, he grabbed the sweet and took the slipper back. So three times I was defeated. So this went on for like 5 minutes. I was trying to do this, you know, and Prabhupada's next to me. And it was all very blissful, really. It was really a lot of fun. But Prabhupada wanted his slipper back. And he kept chewing, and then he peeled the end off of his heel. And after losing three sweets in about 10 minutes with this monkey harassing, and then Prabhupada just looked up and he said, he has ruined the slipper. He said, never mind. And Prabhupada walked into his room. And I had Prabhupada's cane still. So then I just started to walk away. And the monkey saw that we had left, so the monkey just kind of sat down there and put the slipper down on the roof. So as I was starting to walk away, there was this two devotees that were there. They were twins. They were the children of Shalavati. Girish and Birbhadra were their names. At the time, they were young, maybe 11 years old or so. And one of them walked by, and I said, oh, Girish. I said, would you please go up onto the roof? I said, monkey's taking Prabhupada's slipper, and it's up there. So I asked him to go up and get it, and then I stayed down safely on the veranda. And he just said, okay, okay. So he went up on the roof. So, of course, as soon as he got up onto the roof and he starts walking, everyone had left, and the slipper was sitting there right at the edge. And as soon as he started to get towards the slipper, whole gang of monkeys came, over a dozen monkeys all came, and they charged him. So I'm just down there, and I don't see what's going on, but I start hearing this scream, and he's, Shrutakirti! He's got Shrutakirti! And I look up, and I see all these monkeys, and they're ready to attack him, you know, they're all, and he's screaming, and fortunately, I had Prabhupada's cane, so I just tossed the cane up, and he just, you know, started wielding the cane around, and all the monkeys dispersed, and then he got the slipper. So then he comes back down with the slipper, and he's all out of breath and scared and all from the experience, and he gives me the slipper. So I took the slipper, and I went back into Prabhupada's room and offered obeisances, and then I brought it to Prabhupada. This slipper is all, you know, there's all saliva all over it, and it's chewed, it's all bite marks in it, and the heel was ripped, the top of the heel. And I showed it to Prabhupada, and he just looks at it. And he said, oh, he said, it's not so bad, he said. And I said, well, I said, I could glue the heel. He said, yes, he said, it's still okay. He said, we can use them. So I put a little glue, I found some glue somewhere, put it on a slipper, and he kept those slippers. And he kept them for some time, and that's what comes up. The next place we went to was a few weeks later. Prabhupada went to Hyderabad. He continued to wear them every day in Vrindavan and had the bite marks on them. Everything was there. And finally then Prabhupada arrived at Hyderabad. And this was in November of 1972. And there we stayed at a one Mr. Pitti's house. It was very wealthy, wealthiest people at the time in Hyderabad. He had a big, big palatial house. And as soon as we walked in, I remember he came up to me and he said, is there anything that Swamiji needs? So finally, it went off in my head. I said, oh, he could use a new pair of walking shoes, some slippers. I said, his were damaged. And he said, okay. So he sent his servant out and he came back with these very fancy Indian sandals, you know, with the little loop around the big toe, and they were all leather. So I brought them into Prabhupada, and he looked at them. He said, I cannot wear these. He says, they're leather shoes. He said, I can't wear them. And I said, okay. So he still kept those slippers and kept wearing them, and I finally arranged for a proper pair of sandals. Those sandals are in Alachua now. They're at my godbrother's house. I gave them to Kirti Raj. He has them in a case. Whenever I go there, I take darshan, those very special sandals from Vrindavan. So Hyderabad, there was a pandal that went on at that time. And they were always very nice. And Prabhupada would speak in Hindi, of course, with the pandals. And also there with Prabhupada at that time, I had mentioned that one devotee, Big Dave, Sudama Vipra. Maharaj, he was a Maharaj, Sudama Vipra, and Siddhasrup Ananda, Goswami at the time. They were also there. Prabhupada was giving them a lot of personal association. And there was an incident there I was telling you about, how he had gotten the milk in Thailand, because he could accomplish whatever he wanted. So this is a little story off to the side. So this Mr. Pitti, he had... You went into his house, big house, and they had very big grounds, and there were guest rooms. Over a dozen guest rooms went along one wall, and he had garages for many cars. He had very many cars, and he even had an American car. He had one car, it was a convertible, a Chevrolet from America. It was a very, very nice car then. And his godbrother, one day, Siddhasarup, wanted to go shopping somewhere. So this Sudama Vipra, he stole the car, the driver, everything. He left the driver because he wanted to take him out himself. So he made a little disturbance there at Mr. Pitti's house that had to be mended. But he actually left the driver and he just took this car because he was an American boy, so he knew this American car. But he just took the car, left the driver, and they went off in this nice convertible. That was another story. So, but he did get milk for Prabhupada in Thailand, hot milk. So then Prabhupada went to Bombay. Now again, this is Bombay, and I didn't know at the time what was going on in Juhu at all, but Prabhupada, when he came to India, he was always going to Bombay, but he managed to stay in Vrindavan for that whole month of Kartik. Now he was in Bombay for 6 weeks. And this was my first experience, like in the big city. You know, we had just gone through Delhi one day, but now we're actually living, I guess, just nearby here, right? It's on Marine Drive, Kartikeya Mahadevia's flat. So I'd like to see that if it's possible while I'm here. That was the first place I was ever in Bombay, and Prabhupada stayed there for over 1 month. He would take his walk along the road here where that mosque is. There's that one I saw when we were riding in the car. There's a nice bay is there, and sometimes Prabhupada would walk back and forth there every morning. So there's so many tirthas here where you can go, where Srila Prabhupada stayed just a few minutes from this temple. These are all very special places. And at the time, it was very different here. I was just discussing with Vishaka, you know, you have a Mercedes-Benz dealer. It's two blocks from here, Mercedes-Benz dealer here in Mumbai, right? And yesterday I saw in the car three BMWs all together just driving. So much money is here. So many things are here now. It was not like that when I was here in 1972, the end of 1972 with Prabhupada. It was very different. You had one car. It was an ambassador. And they were everywhere. That's all there were ambassadors and then the little taxi cabs. I think they were like Fiats or something at the time. So that's all there were. But the cars were ambassadors. And basically, I think there were two colors. There were black ambassadors and there were tan ambassadors. And they were everywhere in this city driving around. And every car had a driver. You didn't drive yourself, you know. This is the advancement, huh? Here in India now, instead of having servants drive and servants cook and servants do your laundry, now you've become westernized. So you buy a car, you drive it yourself, and you cook in the kitchen with modern things, and you have a washing machine, but now you wash your own laundry. So now you're more advanced, so you can work harder like we do in the West. So every morning, Prabhupada would go on his walk, and he would take a drive to different places. And Shamasundar, his secretary, he would do the driving. And Kartikeya, he let us use his car, which was an ambassador, right? So he would go. We didn't have to go far, just 5 or 10 minutes, but Prabhupada always liked a nice place to take his walk. So the one morning we went and got out. Shamasundar parked the car and we all got out. And I think it was right on that drive there, went right by that mosque. I don't know what the place is. yes. So it was right by there, just walking back and forth. And I remember that one morning. It was always interesting here. Like I say, in India, it's such a different experience. One morning we were on that very walk and the sun was rising. And there was a man lying on the curb, which there's always people lying on the curbs, right, sleeping. But when we were walking, Prabhupada looked and he said, "See that man?" I said, "Yes." He said, "He's dead." And he just kept walking along. So looked just like any other sleeping person, but Prabhupada said he was dead. So then, of course, we walked by and the same man was there. It hadn't moved or anything. I still don't know, but Prabhupada knew he was dead and he was just lying there. But he didn't, you know, he didn't say anything or do anything. He just let us know that it was a dead person on the sidewalk. So then the day we get back to the car, and Shamasundar would get in the front, and then I would let Prabhupada in the back of the car, and then I would walk to the other door and go and sit down. So now we're sitting down in the back, and Shamasundar tries to start the car, and there was a problem. And the car wouldn't start. So Shamasundar was Prabhupada's secretary, and he always acted very quickly and did things, and he's trying, and it just wouldn't start. So, of course, he doesn't want Prabhupada just to sit there and have to wait for something. So after just a few minutes of it not working, he said, Prabhupada said, I'm going to go get a taxi. He said, and we'll take you back in a taxi, and then I'll see what's wrong with the car later. So Prabhupada just nodded. So we just waited in the car while Shyamasundar went to try to arrange a taxi. And we're sitting back there, and Prabhupada's chanting. And I'm chanting. And all of a sudden, the doors open to the car, both doors open. And two young men, they get into our car, and they sit down. And I'm like, what's going on? And they start talking in Hindi. And Prabhupada's in the back, and he's just sitting there, and he's conversing with them. And then he looks at me. He says, we're sitting in their car. So Shyamasundar brought us back to the wrong car because they all looked the same. So instead of getting in Kartikeya's car, we got in their car, and we're sitting in their car. So they came back from whatever they were doing and see two people sitting in their car. But they just got in and sat down, and they weren't bothered either. So Prabhupada's laughing, and he's talking to them. And then he looks at me again, and he says, it's okay. He said, they're taking us home. And then he says, this is the difference, he said, between your country, he said, and India. He said, if this was in America, he said, and we were sitting in somebody's car, they would have come over and taken us out of the car and started beating on us, he said. He said, but in India, he said, it's not like that. He said, there's some culture here. He said, and they come and they see a sadhu. He said, so immediately, even though they're sitting in their car, he said, they're respectful. He said, and they offer to take you home. So they're driving us home, and Prabhupada's talking with them. They're having a nice conversation. And Prabhupada invited them up into Kartikeya's house to take breakfast prasadam, and they declined. They were already busy. They said they had to go to work. He said, but they thanked Prabhupada very much and for the opportunity to take him to where he lived. And then they just got out of the car, or we got out of the car, went upstairs. And Shyamasundar, he came along later on and he found out what had happened. But none of us had any idea because of these ambassador cars. So then another morning we were on that same drive. And the sun was coming up. And I'm walking, Prabhupada's walking, and I'm feeling very tired. You know, as I'm walking, I had no energy. Now I had been in India for 2 months. And as we're walking along, Shyamasundar looked at me, and the sun's coming up and shining in our faces, and he just looks at me and he said, whoa, do you have jaundice? He said. He said, your eyes are so yellow. So I guess, again, this was a new experience for me in India. Now I had jaundice. And he starts laughing, because this is how we did things. We took pleasure sometimes. So he was laughing that I had jaundice. And he starts telling me, he said, your eyes are so yellow. And he's saying, how do you feel? And we're just walking along. Prabhupada's walking along, and just the three of us. And I'm saying, I said, I don't have very much energy. And he said, what color is your urine? So I said, well, it's gotten a little dark. He said, you really have jaundice, he said. So anyway, we go on the morning walk. We come back to the temple. And this became the topic outside of Prabhupada's room. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was there. And so we start discussing my jaundice. And Tamal Krishna says, you can't cook for Prabhupada. He said, you shouldn't be doing anything because I used to make his breakfast, everything, cut up his fruits. He said, jaundice is very contagious. He said, so you have to be careful. Prabhupada could get jaundice, just by you touching his plates and things. I said, I'm like, really, He said, yes, yes. I said, oh, okay, So, of course, immediately, I was just a young boy. I go right into Prabhupada's room, offer obeisances, and Prabhupada just sitting behind his desk. And I said, Prabhupada, I think I have jaundice. And he just looks at me. He said, oh. He said, what are your symptoms? I said, so I repeated. I said, my eyes are very yellow. And I said, and my urine is brown. And I said, and I have no energy at all. And he looks at me again. He said, perhaps I also have jaundice. He didn't have jaundice. He was just making a little joke. He said, because this is the condition, right, of a living entity. And especially he was older, so you have no energy. And so he said, maybe I also have jaundice. And then I said, Prabhupada, I said, they're telling me that I shouldn't cook for you, that I shouldn't handle your plates. I said, because you might get jaundice. And he said, well, how do you feel? He said, can you do these things? I said, yes, Prabhupada. I said, it's okay. He said, then don't worry about it. He said, you do your service. He said, you can make my plates. He said, there's no problem. He said, I won't get jaundice. He said. So then, of course, I continued to do my service. And the one bonus was he told them that you have to give Shrutakirti sugarcane juice 3 times a day. So that was my special treat. Because we know, right, if you have jaundice, sugarcane juice, Prabhupada always used that analogy, it doesn't taste sweet, but you keep drinking and drinking, and as you get better, then you can taste the sugarcane juice. So that was my special little treat from Prabhupada. I got sugarcane juice every day. So just to go off a little bit, it was off the schedule. It was a year later, more than a year later. Again, we're in Ahmedabad, and Brahmananda had jaundice. So he started a special diet. We would eat, Westerners, we always had our own style when we were ill. We started eating boiled vegetables. You know, that was our specialty. We would just eat boiled vegetables. When, back in the beginning, when Prabhupada became ill, Govinda Dasi was his servant, cook, secretary. So when Prabhupada became ill, she would give him boiled vegetables. And Prabhupada called it starvation diet. He said, I would rather die than eat boiled vegetables. But Americans, this was our cure for everything. We would make boiled vegetables we would eat. Right? We ask for that when we're not well, boiled vegetables. But Prabhupada said, I would rather die than eat this starvation diet, he said. One other thing he said, she also, she was known for not being very healthy sometimes, Govinda Dasi, and she always had different problems. So sometimes she couldn't make to the morning program, and Prabhupada would say, what's wrong? And they said, well, Govinda Dasi is not feeling well. And he would always ask about her health in letters, how are you feeling, because she had problems. And one time he was asking about her, and they said, well, she's not feeling well, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, she will be sick in the spiritual world. He said, and he started laughing. So he didn't, Prabhupada was, could be very strict as well. He didn't like to hear too much about these illnesses. In Mayapur, it happened once. He was coming down the stairs from the Lotus building, going on his morning walk, and he was looked around. All his leaders were there. And he asked, he said, where is such and such? And someone said, oh, he's not feeling well, Prabhupada. And I was right beside Prabhupada, and I just smiled, and I looked at him. I said, yes, Prabhupada. I said, he has morning sickness. And Prabhupada started laughing. He said, yes, that is the problem. He said, morning sickness. He said, that difficulty. In the morning, you feel sick, so you can't get up. But then for prasadam time, then you feel better. Oh, he said, so he said, if you don't attend a morning program, then you should fast from breakfast, you know. So Prabhupada even would say these things. So anyway, this was just 1 year later. Brahmananda, he was Prabhupada's secretary, and he had jaundice. So of course, I went right into Prabhupada's room a year later, and I have no memory of anything, you know. And I go in and I offer obeisances. So I tell him, Brahmananda, he has jaundice. And Prabhupada goes, oh, what are the symptoms? So again, I tell Prabhupada the symptoms. And as soon as I tell him, his urine is brown and his eyes are yellow and he has no strength. And Prabhupada looks at me very seriously. He said, perhaps I also have jaundice. And then he smiles, and it wasn't until after he said it all that I realized Prabhupada always remembered everything, and he could extend a joke. Sometimes Prabhupada would make a joke, and he would use over and over. He had such wonderful memory. And so again, he just laughed at me. Because Prabhupada, you know, all these things, which again I never would think of. I mean, Prabhupada was a chemist, but he had his pharmacy. He knew so much about medicines and illnesses and diseases. But sometimes he would say these things. When I first got sick, it was after Vrindavan in Hyderabad, we were Ahmedabad, and I actually had malaria, and I didn't even know it, and I was so ill. And I remember saying to Prabhupada, I said, Prabhupada, I said, like, I've never been sick, you know? I said, I feel so sick, and I've never sick like this. I said, I've always been very healthy, and he looked at me, and he had this big look of surprise, and he smiled. He said, really? I said, no, Prabhupada. I said, I've never been sick like this. He said, that's wonderful. He said, that's our normal condition. He said, in the material world, we're diseased. He said, that's the normal condition. He said, that's very wonderful. Of course, the disease is always there, right? The body, you know, Prabhupada would speak. He would say things so many levels. He says, so that's our disease condition, is we think we're this body, and as a result, always misery is there. Of course, I wasn't seeing it in that way. I just felt so ill that day. So in Bombay, we were staying there. And no, I was still new with Prabhupada. And I was giving him his massage before lunch. And he had just wear a gamsha and sit on the mat. And I would have my gamsha on. And I was massaging Prabhupada's legs with oil. And on his leg, his one leg, he has one scar spread out on his leg. And I was rubbing up and down. And he just looked down. And he said, do you see that scar? I said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, I got that scar when I was a young boy. He said, just a young child. He said, and I was in front of our house. And he said, and I was playing with matches. And I was just wearing some cotton cloth. He said, and I was playing with matches. And somehow or other, he said, I started the match. And he said, all my cloth went up on fire. He said, and I was just sitting there. He said, and immediately, he said, out of nowhere, he said, some man appeared. He said, and he grabbed me and he put out the flames. He said, and then he just left. He said, so that's how I got that scar. And then again, he said, out of nowhere, some man appeared. We made it sound very, very mysterious. So this scar was on his leg. So it was, anything could happen as you were just massaging Srila Prabhupada. Or he would just think of something. And he would tell you these stories. And it was just like Prabhupada would go back into time as he would tell you these stories, you know. So, another thing Prabhupada spoke about, I remember. By now I was in India for a few months, and already I was having difficulties. I wasn't appreciating living in India very much, because by this time I already had malaria. I was there 2 months, and I had malaria 1 month. I had jaundice another month. So I was, again, these experiences for me were hard. But one day we were in Kartikeya's place, and Prabhupada was having a meeting with his senior disciples. Garga Muni was there. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was there. Other devotees were there. And by this time, they had the main program they had in India was this life membership program that they had started. You remember back in the beginning days in India, they had life membership. And for 1,111 rupees, you would get a card, your life membership card. And you would get whatever books had been published. At the time, there were 5-6 books. And you got a promise to receive each Bhagavatam as it came out until you received all of the books. So you got all of this for 1,000 rupees. And then you got your card, which allowed you to stay in any temple in ISKCON around the world for 3 days. So this became a very popular sell in India. It was very popular with with the people in India. And this was the preaching. It wasn't so much you would preach and make devotees, but you would make life members. And you would collect this donation. And then they would get their card and they would get the books. But Prabhupada was getting letters from life members, people that had just become life members after 2, 3, 4 months, and they weren't getting any of these services. They weren't getting new books. They weren't getting the books that were already out after becoming life members. So Prabhupada got letters to this effect, so he called this meeting, and he was very upset. And this was one of the first meetings I sat in on, and Prabhupada was yelling. And this was kind of a new experience, other than a little chastisement. This whole meeting was very serious, very intense. Prabhupada kept yelling at him, "How are you? You said you're making life members. You're making these promises to these people. You must keep these promises. You're telling them you're going to give them books. And you're not giving them books," he said, "and I'm having to deal with it." And Prabhupada would always bring things back to, "How can I do my translating work?" He said, "If I have so many headaches, so many management," he said, "I have my GBC, I have my senior devotees who have to take care of all these things, so I'm not burdened with these difficulties." He said, "But we're becoming a farce here in India." He said, "It's such a big mess is going on, you're not taking care of these." He said, "We may as well just pick up and leave India." And the first thing I thought was, "Well, that would really be nice." Because I found India difficult. And I thought, and again, I was a new devotee with Prabhupada. So whenever he said something, I would think Prabhupada would do this, you know, that he was just going to pick up and leave. Because he kept saying, "If we can't manage this program, we should all just leave India." And he kept saying it. And I'm thinking, Prabhupada's going to leave India. Because he had no intention of leaving India, but he wanted to impress upon them how serious this difficulty was. Not that he was going to go anywhere. But for me, it was India was a difficult place. Now I never want to leave India. Things are so nice here. But at the time, it was very austere to be in India. And my godbrothers, they were also having so many difficulties to be in India. And they remained because Prabhupada had such a desire to develop this place, because it is the nicest place. Huh? So many wonderful temples. There's Juhu Temple is there, this temple. Everywhere is wonderful temples. But at the time, it was a very difficult struggle. But he kept impressing upon them, "You have to, not simply you make promises, but whatever he said, then we had to do, not just say things." So over and over again, he would have these meetings about this life membership going on, because that was basically all the preaching that happened. Even Prabhupada, he had so many well-wishers and friends that would help him, like in Juhu and Bombay and different cities. But none of them took initiation from Prabhupada. Huh? They all became his friends. But mostly they all stayed in their Hindu tradition. And they saw that Prabhupada was spreading that Hindu tradition around. And they appreciated and they wanted to help him. But none of them understood exactly what Prabhupada was doing. Very few at the time could understand that Prabhupada was giving Krishna, the Supreme Personality. Like he's here right here in Juhu was one devotee. He was learning Hindi. So Prabhupada heard he was learning Hindi. And he asked him, he said, "You know, what are you doing?" He said, "I'm learning Hindi, Prabhupada." And he said, "Why?" He said, "Well, I want to preach to the Hindi people. Prabhupada said, I have been preaching to Indians my whole life. He said, I haven't made one Indian devotee. He said, what are you going to do? So at the time it was not so easy. India was not receptive. Had to becoming Krishna conscious. And I'm not making devotees. Even Prabhupada, he spoke to so many. Like I was saying yesterday, he would ask families. He would say, he would ask families. They would have 3-4 sons. Just give me one son to become a brahmachari. They had no desire. They wanted them all to become. This is when you would go to life member's house and they would introduce their family. This is my wife. And this is my son. He is a doctor. And this is my other son. And he is some scientist. And this is, they were so proud to introduce their children and all their material qualifications. And they would introduce to Prabhupada like he would be impressed by these things. And Prabhupada would see this potential, this should be brahmachari. You know, all these brahmacharis could be there, but only they were interested in material progress in India. So this was the state of affairs in the early 1970s. So it's almost 9 o'clock. Do you have any questions or comments today? Nothing? On to 9:15. Okay, we'll go on to 9:15. Any questions over there? Nothing? One question.
Whenever we enter a spiritual master's room, is it always good to always of obeisances, irrespective of like a person like you going in his room maybe 20 times in a day or whatever?
Each time, 100 times a day, you always offered obeisances when you entered Prabhupada's room. He once, it was here in Juhu, and Prabhupada was staying in the flat. He would come down, go a morning walk every morning. And as soon as he came, there was a nice garden there. And there would be 50 so devotees there, and everyone would pay obeisances. Naturally, Prabhupada appeared. And at that time, there was one, it was an Indian devotee. And he stood there with folded hands, and he just put his head down, but he didn't get down on the ground. And Prabhupada just continued walking, and he turned to me and he said, that is the beginning of his fall down. Just that one thing. So that's how, and also that's how when one falls down, we don't fall quickly. We fall very gradually in the beginning. Huh? You become inattentive, just like we become inattentive to chanting. In so many ways, we become inattentive in devotional service. So we become lazy. You do something and then you do a little something else. That tendency could be there. I know when I was with Prabhupada that I would really like consciously want to make sure I always offered obeisances, because that's how you would think, just like I was describing going in with 6 chapatis, you know, in 10 minutes. So it would be very easy, and Prabhupada wouldn't say anything, but it would be easy just to go in and put it down and think, oh, I'm very busy, my service, you know, and just go. But your spiritual master is a pure devotee of Krishna, and you can only help you to always offer your obeisances to him. So everyone, they would always. He had one, his Sanskrit editor at the time, it wasn't Prajumna, he had one time another Sanskrit editor. And many times they would ask Prabhupada questions when he was taking massage. Also, he would go over his mail when he was taking massage. That way you didn't have to disturb Prabhupada at a different time of the day when he was sitting in his room, because he was getting massage, so that activity was going on. So sometimes the secretary and Sanskrit editor, they would come in. So this boy, he came in, his Sanskrit editor, and he offered obeisances, and he asked Prabhupada about one Sanskrit word, some question. And then he left. And then 5 minutes later, he came back in, and again he offered obeisances, but maybe it was half the mantra, a little more quickly. And then he came up and he asked Prabhupada a question. And then he left again. And then a few minutes later, he came back in, and he just came in and he just bobbed his head on the ground, just put it down for a second, put his head down, and he came up. And even before he could say anything, Prabhupada said, "You offer obeisances." He said, "What is this hatchet?" And he made this. He said, "What is this hatchet obeisances?" He said, just bopping down. So Prabhupada chastised. He was very fortunate Prabhupada said something. But he said, "Don't do this hatchet." Yeah. And it's such a nice word, too, the way Prabhupada said hat, because you could just cut your Krishna consciousness out by that hatchet, you know. So that's how he described it. He said, "Don't do hatchet obeisances." So I'm sure maybe some of you know what hatchet obeisances are, where you come in, you're walking through the temple room, and you just, you like that, you know. You offer. So these are dangerous things in Krishna consciousness to offer. And I told my god brother, I'll tell this, this is Paramahamsa Swami. I described that, huh? Sunday, how that was one of the complaints when he took sannyas. He didn't know so many mantras. But then when he became Prabhupada's secretary, he was offering so many prayers to Prabhupada. And then finally Prabhupada said, "Sit up." He said, "How are we going to get any work done with you down there saying so many prayers?" So Prabhupada was practical, and he appreciated, and he just made a little joke. But he said, "Get up, sit up, sit up." He said, "We have so much work to do." So not that we'd be foolish. Like he said that to Vishal. In Vrindavan, Vishal, Prabhupada's disciple, my godbrother, he was always offering, whenever he would see Prabhupada, he would say, "Srila Prabhupada, the spiritual master of the whole world, save the world." He would go on and on and on. So one day in Vrindavan, he came in and he's chanting all these prayers, and Prabhupada just looked at him. He said, "Do something practical." There was one thing, and we'll just move ahead a little bit. So it was in Los Angeles. So now I have been with Prabhupada some 8 months. So many things happened in New Dwarka. I said I really, that was like my home temple in the 70s, New Dwarka. I felt, you know, traveling with Prabhupada, you're everywhere, but I guess I wanted to feel like I had a home, so I guess I made it New Dwarka. And Prabhupada was very sweet in New Dwarka. He'd always give so many instructions. He would say so many things to me in his room. And yeah, that's where he described chanting japa. We say when he would walk back and forth through his rooms, up and down the hall, he would just walk around and chant. And then he would just turn to me, you know, once he said. And he was chanting. Sometimes he would chant very loud, and very intensely on his beads. As I said, this Juhu project was causing so many problems. And he just looked at me. He said, "When you're in anxiety," he said, "you chant very loudly." And he was chanting so loudly on his beads. And then another time he said, "If you're tired," he said, "you can walk around and chant." He said, "Just like I'm doing." He said, "You can just walk around and you chant japa on your beads, you know." And then he said, "When I was a householder," he said, "you would chant 4 rounds in the morning." He said, "Then 4 rounds before breakfast, 4 rounds before lunch, and 4 rounds before dinner." He said, "In this way, it's very easy to complete your 16 rounds." He said, "Even in household life." He said, "And if you don't chant your 4 rounds, then you can't take that meal." So probably he would give these little things, like, "If you don't go to the morning program, you can't take your meal. If you don't chant your 4 rounds," he said, "then you can't have that meal." He said, "In this way, you'll get your rounds finished," because he knew that desire how to take prasadam was so great. And then I mentioned another time he said, If it wasn't for the chanting, he said, you Westerners are so fallen. Imagine, we were his disciples. You know, this was unheard of. People, you get nice boys, huh? And Indians, they're brahmacharis. Never even spoken with a woman. Now he's got disciples that that's all they did their whole life. They were mixing freely with young boys and girls. We were drinking by the time we were 13 years old, smoking cigarettes. You know, by the time we were 16, everyone was smoking marijuana. Not everyone, many smoking marijuana and taking LSD. And these people had become Prabhupada's disciples now, and they were opening temples all around the world. And he looked at me, he said, if it wasn't for the chanting of Hare Krishna, he said, you American boys and girls, he said, you couldn't accomplish anything in Krishna consciousness. He said, so much intoxication, illicit sex. He said, it's just the chanting. So Prabhupada had that from the very beginning. He had that faith in Maha Mantra. And of course, really it was just Prabhupada's desire. All these things were happening. Because he was such a pure devotee of Krishna. He had such strong desire to spread Krishna consciousness. Krishna gave him all facility, even us Westerners were assisting Prabhupada in this way. So he was very pleased, but he knew, not that he didn't know what we were like, he knew what our habits were. And when it was the first big major fall down, it was major because it was a big, well-known devotee, Kurandar. He was managing New Dwarka, he was a GBC, it was like Prabhupada said, Kurandar can do anything. Prabhupada had such faith in things that he did. When he fell down, everyone in the society was shaken. You know, right? We became, if he could fall down, anyone we could fall down. And Prabhupada said, don't be surprised. He said, if someone leaves, he said, you should be surprised if they stay. So it's not such an easy thing, Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada made it seem, he always made it seem like we could become pure devotees. He said, but don't be so surprised. So the one time it was in New Dwarka, and I had been with Prabhupada several months now, almost a year, and I also was, and this was why Prabhupada would say these different things to me, you know. He didn't preach to me. Prabhupada was so amazing. He would say things to devotees. He would preach to you exactly what you needed to hear, but he didn't make it seem like he was preaching to you. He would just speak in general, just like he was telling me, you can get your rounds done in this way. These were instructions for me. So I also was having my own struggles. But he would just say it in a general way, not that preachiness, you know, that we immediately become affected by. So when we arrived there in Los Angeles, I was also struggling, I remember, and Prabhupada came to the airport. Now there were hundreds of devotees at the airport, you know, a dozen mridanga players and cartel players, and everyone was allowed into the airport. They would go right up to the gate. And imagine Prabhupada coming off the plane, and there was always some space between him and who came off before, and Prabhupada would always tell me when it was on the plane, and just whenever the fasten your seatbelt sign would go on in the plane because it was going to land, immediately Prabhupada would get up. So he did just the opposite. He would say, fasten your seatbelt, and Prabhupada would get up and he would use the bathroom. And then he would put on fresh tilak. Then he would come back to his seat, you know, and they would always make a disturb, well, you can't get up now. And I would just say, you know, tell him, don't tell me, you know, because, again, in my own way, I would have to accompany Prabhupada to the bathroom because he didn't go alone, so I would go to the bathroom and wait outside the door. So we would just ignore everyone, all the stewardesses or whatever, if they said anything. Sometimes they wouldn't even bother because they saw Prabhupada was not your usual personality, so sometimes they wouldn't even try to say anything. Then he would come back, and he would sit down, and then when the plane touched down, he would say, oh, get the garlands, you know. And after a while, I just knew. So I would get all the garlands from the beginning of the flight. There would be so many garlands. And Prabhupada would pick the one he wanted. Nice, big gardenia, roses, such beautiful garlands, fragrant garlands they had in the States. And put it on Prabhupada, and then he would say, okay. And he would make all of us put garlands on. So then you could hear the kirtan from whenever the plane touched down, and you could hear this loud, because, you know, they were waiting. So each minute that went by, that desire would just become more great in every devotee. So now everyone had their garlands, and when Prabhupada's turn came, he would get up, and he would be in the front. So as people started getting out of the plane, of course, the kirtan's getting more intense because now they know it's just another 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever it was. So, and they're all, and you could, from the other side, I never saw Prabhupada come off of a plane because I was always behind him. And I was never in a situation any other time where Prabhupada came somewhere. So my only experience was to be behind Prabhupada, hearing these kirtans and seeing the devotees from behind Prabhupada. So, of course, I could hear it. And this particular day, for some reason, I was just, I was in Maya, you know, I was just depressed. And so we're all coming off the plane, and as each person goes, and then there'd be a little space, and they're hoping the next one is Prabhupada, you know, so the kirtan. So finally, they see Prabhupada, and of course, everyone is in hysteria, everyone's in ecstasy, and simultaneously, everyone's falling down on the ground, the kirtan's going on, people are jumping up and down and laughing and crying and so many things. And I'm right behind Prabhupada, and I'm just walking, holding bags, you know, and that was my consciousness. I just wasn't joining in this ecstasy that was there. So you can be, right? You can be completely right before Krishna, and you can be in Maya, you know. So Prabhupada was right there, and I was right behind him, and I'm seeing all my God brothers and God sisters, and they're all crying in ecstasy and so happy. Prabhupada hadn't been there for so many months, and Prabhupada would just have this big, delightful smile. And these garlands sometime would go down to his knees, you know, these very big, long garlands, and just walk so gracefully. You know, we were saying yesterday, Prabhupada simultaneously looked like he was a king. He walked royally, regally. And at the same time, he appeared so humble. So how could you do these two things? One, he was like a king, and the other, he was so much humility, you could see at the same time. So all these things were there at the same time. All these qualities existed simultaneously with Prabhupada. You know, you would look at this king who was humble and then filled with so much love, and his eyes would just gaze over everyone. Like everyone got the opportunity to connect with Prabhupada's eyes as he looked around, you know. And I'm behind him carrying the white bag and another bag. And I was just feeling so troubled that I saw these devotees experience all this bliss. And here I was with Prabhupada and I didn't feel it. So now I was even more depressed. Anyway, we went back to the temple, and Prabhupada gets into his quarters, which were so nice. I liked New Dwarka so much. You know, we went in. Prabhupada had nice facilities. And I went about, arranged everything, his desk, the bathroom. And it was late morning. So then I had to give Prabhupada his massage. So I set everything up, and I set up the cooker, made the chapati dough. I do all my services and all. I start massaging Prabhupada. And again, I said, the questions I ask Prabhupada, you could count in one hand, you know. So for some reason, I'm massaging Prabhupada. And I was feeling so bad that I decided to say something to him. And I said, Prabhupada, I said, all your disciples, they love you so much. And so I'm massaging, and I said, but I don't feel that. And I felt so bad. And I said, they're all in ecstasy. They can't wait to see you. I said, but I'm not feeling any of that. And he didn't say anything. So I just continued my massage, and now I'm thinking, oh, I really said something real nonsense, you know. But I just kept massaging him, and I go around. And the whole massage, another hour went by, and Prabhupada didn't say anything to me. So now I'm just massaging him, and I'm kind of letting go of my mind, you know, how my mind was. And I just kept massaging. So I finished the massage, and then Prabhupada just dropped his copan and walked off. So when he walked off, I had to continue. I was doing all my service, and I arranged everything on the bed, and then I arranged everything on his desk for his, putting his tilak on. Then I went back in, and I start preparing his plates, you know, got the thali and the katuris, and started rolling some chapatis. And by now I had kind of forgotten. I was engaged in service. I felt better now because I was doing something instead of sitting, listening to my mind, you know. And I just did my service. So then Prabhupada finishes his Gayatri, and I bring in his plates and I put them on the table next to his bed, and Prabhupada came and sat down. So then I'm back and forth bringing him his chapatis, and I'm offering obeisances. And then Prabhupada, and he's still not saying one word to me. He's just taking prasadam. So then he finished prasadam, and I grabbed the plates, and Prabhupada went and sat down in his room, and now I take the plates. I'm washing his plates and transfer everything. And I took prasadam, took some of his remnants, and then I distribute all his maha to who's ever around. It wasn't hard. People in the know are always knew when to be around to get Prabhupada's remnants. This was the most wonderful. One of the nicest things was distributing Prabhupada's remnants from his prasadam, had a maha maha prasadam. So then I do all that, and then Prabhupada took rest, so I just finished doing everything, and I was in my room. So then about an hour later, the bell rings. And by now, I'm just in a whole different world, you know. And I went into Prabhupada's room, and I offered obeisances. And he just looked at me, and he said, do you like your service? I said, oh, yes, Prabhupada, very much. He said, service is love. He said, because you're doing service, he said, that's love. He said, they may be jumping up and down and so many things. He said, but service is love. He said, you just continue, you do your service nicely. He said, and everything else will be okay. He said, you do very nice. I said, thank you, Prabhupada. And I just felt all ecstatic, you know. Everything was nice. And I just offered obeisances and left the room. So these things, they come and go. And the mind is there. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, when you wake up, you beat your mind with shoes, you know, 100 times. And then in the evening, again, you beat the mind with the broom, right? Like 100 times. So this is the mind. Once Nandakumar said to Prabhupada, he was having difficulty. He said, Prabhupada, he said, it's so difficult controlling the tongue. And Prabhupada looked, he said, I also have a tongue. You know, you're not telling me anything I don't know. You know, Prabhupada made it very practical, very simple. He said, I also have a tongue. Yes, it's difficult to control, but that's what we have to do. We practice. And for us, he said, take prasadam. Young devotees, it's always take prasadam, so much prasadam. Prabhupada always wanted to take so much prasadam. So anyway, it's getting late now. We'll stop there. Tomorrow morning I'll start with another nice story in New Dwarka. And I'd like to thank all the devotees at the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, where my wife and I have gone the last few days. I think they listen from the telephone. It's all put through the telephone there. So all the devotees here are so sweet, and all the devotees there have been so nice to both of us. And I'm sure everyone that goes there, they have such wonderful devotional attitudes. And I'd just like to thank them. And I had the very good fortune yesterday of seeing Stoka Krishna Prabhu. And I feel blessed that I got the chance to see him, such a wonderful devotee. And I could see how he could be Radhanath Maharaj's servant. Because Radhanath Maharaj, he's so sweet, such a sweet devotee. So to be his personal servant, you even have to be sweeter, to be the servant of one who's so sweet. And when, as soon as I walked into the room, I just saw the sweetest devotee. And I feel very fortunate, you know, to have association of so many wonderful devotees. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.